You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, and welcome to My Happy Defender Childhood. We've grown a lot in the last month, so if you're new, welcome. This week, we're talking about Stargate. It was actually interesting. I'd heard of this movie. I'd even seen probably bits and pieces of it. I hadn't seen it all the way through. Also, if you're a regular listener, you might realize that these are out of order. I only realized today that I released the wrong one last week, and I'm not very good at this. So, you know, whatever. Anyway, if you're listening to this and you like what we do, please give us a 5-star rating. We've been growing, and I've seen some new reviews, and most of them are pretty good. So, awesome. Next, share us. You've subscribed this far or listened this far. Good on you. Otherwise, please, Facebook group. We have a Facebook group, and we share goofy shit. Join us. And then finally, if you're interested, not today, but the first Thursday of June, June 7th, they are riffing Masters of the Universe, the Dolph Lundgren classic. I'm not a part of it, but I will be there in the audience to laugh at them joke-em-ups. So see you there, and oh, Patreon. Join the Earthstation 1 Patreon. We have submitted an episode. It's not up yet, but we'll be up soon. And with Season 5 around the corner, you can be expectant of some pretty exciting new things. Thanks.
Okay, auditions for the new Earth Station Who co-host. Take one, go ahead.
Hello, Stonehenge. Who takes the Pandorica, takes the universe. But, bad news everyone, cause guess who, ha. Listen, you lot you're all whizzing about. It's really very distracting. Could you all just stay still a minute because I am talking?
Not too shabby. Can you close this up?
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. You never know where the TARDIS is going to go next. Earth Station Who podcast can be found at www.earthstationwho.com. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO Network. We are up on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace and we are done. Did I pass the audition?
We'll get back to you. Next.
Welcome to My Beauty Gender Childhood. This week, we watched James Spader with a wig. We saw Stargate, 1990, you said four?
Yeah.
Four. Roland Emmerich before he became Hollywood's greatest criminal. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor of Dude Letter and host of My Beauty Gender Childhood, and I guess Cineprov, whatever. And on panel, we've got
Matthew W. Quinn, whose novel The Thing in the Woods involves aliens but not creepy teenagers.
Just regular teenagers.
Yeah.
They're plenty creepy on their own.
Yeah.
Those teenagers, wacky and creepy.
You goddamn kids, get off my lawn.
Etc.
All you kids these days with your pumped up kicks.
Wow, that's like a 12-year-old reference.
That is a deep cut right there. I'm actually impressed.
I mean, that's like the most recent reference I think we've made in a while. Copsy.
And I'm John. I'm sometimes editor of Mission Briefing Podcast.
Yeah, coming soon to Patreon.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Daniel, and it is not the Stargate, it is the Fargate. Sorry, that was me trying to be Oglethorpe, and I failed miserably.
Oglethorpe. Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. We do not eat our own farts.
That might still be more recent than
pumped up kicks.
I don't know.
It's kind of pushing up against
I just remember Frylock. What the hell? Someone's stealing our cable. Through the Fargate.
The Fargate.
I don't know if we wanted to actually talk about this movie that much.
I'll do it.
I mean, yeah, we will. I mean, that's kind of what no one pays us to do. We eat chicken.
Oh, you guys aren't paid?
Sorry. No.
Okay, John, you got to help me out. I'm in deep to
some
people.
Coming soon to Patreon. What part of that didn't you understand?
Yeah, right. We'll talk about our Patreon later. So,
at the moment, though. We should talk about this movie. John, I believe this was your suggestion from last year's survey.
God, was it? Oh, that was a long time ago.
So, I mean, I agreed with it. I'm not throwing you under the bus, but...
So, yeah, I never saw this in theaters, but I remember the exact day I bought it. I went to Barnes & Noble, and being how it was Barnes & Noble in the mid-90s, I guess... I picked up a VHS copy of Stargate.
And it probably costs $45.99?
Absolutely. And I, at the same time, I picked up the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Oh, that is
best
a good day.
Soundtrack
that is a
ever.
Good day right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Colonel O'Neill's fatality move there. Blow him up.
Exactly, exactly. So, a good day, really.
Ice Cube, you ain't got nothing on JC right here. He had the good day.
Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
At least they didn't say Borders.
For the kids out there, Barnes & actually, it may have been a Borders. It may have been a Borders.
We're getting into some deep cuts here.
So Borders and Barnes & Noble were like a Blockbuster, but for books.
And you had to own them.
Yes, you had to own them, yeah.
And they shall be missed.
Barnes & Noble's still around. I don't know how much I miss Borders because I used to use their bathrooms.
Haven't we all, Nick?
Good selection back in the day, but they were always so damn overpriced. And Barnes & Noble is still overpriced, but it just doesn't have a good selection anymore.
I'd always loved history, so the idea of history plus sci-fi appealed to me, and it was Egypt and things blowing up, and so teenage me just gravitated toward it.
Oh, that lovely Kurt Russell haircut was just...
Wasn't it amazing?
Oh, you just couldn't stay away from that, could you?
Kurt Russell is the only one doing anything with this movie. He, in a good way. Like, he's nailing it. I love Kurt Russell in general. I mean, we might as well have story time because this is story time. But when I was a little kid, when I was in high school...
Kurt Russell came into your house.
All right. When I was in high school...
Where did Kurt Russell touch you?
Which... 20 years ago now, because I was a freshman in 99, so 19 years ago. But in the library, under the Dewey Decimal System, ladies, 000 is the sci-fi stuff, right? It's like the sci-fi that pretends to be real, right? So it's like Bigfoot sightings and alien abduction stories. Mm. And I cracked,
History Channel.
Right, exactly. History Channel after 9 p.m. back in the 90s.
Every single YouTube channel now.
And Alex Jones' whole career.
Yeah, I used to love that section too, all the Bigfoot and UFO books.
Oh, I remember those big coffee table UFO books back in the day.
So I cracked out Chariots of the Gods.
Oh.
And that's kind of this in a nutshell, right?
Van Daniken. That's
Van Daniken.
Really old school.
Wow. 1970 Dutch man who was convinced that all the old gods were aliens from outer space and that they were the ones responsible for everything from... the Ark of the Covenant, which is a radio transmitter, and he showed how the wiring would work as a radio transmitter, to the pyramids being built by, you know, aliens and the Nazca lines, which are giant people drawn into rock kind of from above that you can only see from above, etc. Now, as a historian nowadays, I know that it's all very doable by slaves. So, you know, yay for Europeans figuring out slavery. Right?
Yay, and the world is a better place.
And the world is a more capitalist place. We live in the Deep South. We wouldn't be here without air conditioning and slavery. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Thanks, white people. But
Jesus,
that's what this movie is in a nutshell, right? It's like literally like... You know, this movie probably in the original pitch was, we're going to discover Jesus. And then they were like, can we do another ancient society?
Dial it down a notch.
Moses then. No.
How's about a god nobody really pays attention to anymore?
Sold.
Well, they had someone found a fanfic where Jesus was a Gooald.
Who?
Jesus was a Gooald, SG-1 alien snakes that possess people.
Yeah.
And it passed down to Peter and then through all the popes.
He's also an actor, Elliot Gould.
Uh-huh.
He is.
I've seen some of Elliot Gould's wonderful movies.
And you didn't even know he was Jesus.
No, I didn't.
Go figure. Yeah.
Not how I would have pictured Jesus, but hey.
But it is interesting that this movie did the reverse of Star Trek. That Star Trek was a series first and it came out with a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
This one was the movie first and they realized there was enough material there. They came out with a bunch of
Well, there was
TV
a lot
shows.
Of early 90s movies that did that. I mean, Buffy did that.
Yeah.
That's true. And it had the same reaction this one did, where the TV show was better received than the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then the movie was, in retrospect,
the
I
movie
think
was
kind of floppy.
The movie was terrible.
Are we talking about Stargate or Buffy?
Buffy. At the moment, we'll get to
that.
And I shall be waiting.
Well, actually, you know what's funny? I think you could tell the quality based on whether it was live action or not. Because if you had done an animated show, it would have been garbage.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because there's also a Karate Kid animated show that I seem to remember.
The Bill and Ted Bill animated and Ted. Show.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
RoboCop had an animated show.
Because, I mean, children love RoboCop.
And even better, Conan. Conan had an animated show.
Conan the Adventurer, yeah. I remember that.
Oh, yes. My goodness gracious. Yeah. That's something that exists.
The 90s were a strange time.
All right, we're going to keep going. So we're going to stop us here. Daniel, give us our plot synopsis.
Okay, so the military's found something in the Great Pyramids of Gaza. First off,
Giza.
Jesus Christ.
We're trying to take the Judeo-Christianity out of it.
If it was in Gaza, Hamas would have blown up the pyramid.
In the Great Pyramids of Giza.
I'm going to make sure that the Syrians and the Palestinians can't blow up any stargates.
Well, they find a device there that's 5,000 years older than what they say the pyramids are. And there's this Egyptologist who's peddling the whole pyramids were built by aliens things. And that's our buddy James Spader, who was just, he looked like that at one point in his life.
Okay, problem. Okay, sorry. I'll let you finish your plot synopsis, and we need to talk about James Spader.
Okay. So they bring him to the device, and it turns out James Spader figures out how to activate this device, which is apparently a doorway to some far end of the universe where a bunch of humans that were kidnapped, I guess, from ancient Egypt, their descendants are still living under the watchful eye of this alien creature who's played by the transgendered woman from The Crying Game, who posed as Ra back when Egypt was a thing. So they're trying to crack all the language barriers and stuff, and they find out that Ra is going to be coming back to Earth to take it over, and so they try and stop him.
Beautiful. So first thing we should talk about is when you go to IMDb and type in Stargate, SG-1 comes before the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know about what we're going to talk about.
This has a 7.1 on the Tribune. I was so surprised to see that.
This, I think, would qualify as a cult movie.
I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, because I think it was clearly a blockbuster success because you don't make a TV show, especially like SG-1, which has juice behind it. It has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's not
a small... It has MacGyver in it.
And it's not small budget. Like, it's a lot. It's a special effects heavy show in 97-ish.
Didn't it run for like 10 years?
Something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah, and then they had Atlantis and then Universe, and then it died.
No, they have another one coming out.
For real?
Yeah.
It may be a reboot of SG-1, but they do have another TV show.
I heard they were talking about rebooting Stargate as a movie trilogy.
Well, and it makes sense because what I told John earlier was it's a better idea than it is a movie, I think. It's a neat thing. Like, you know, you find an ancient Egyptian, like, birth control pill in the sand, and then it takes you through... It's a giant disc with ridges around the outside. Yeah. It looks like a birth control tab. Whatever. It goes through time. It's a neat idea.
It's a great idea. I just don't know if it was well-executed in this movie.
Well, and what you're... God, who's the damn character actor who's the... Who's the Egyptologist that they call in who can't do anything right?
The guy from Spin City.
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about? He's great. Richard Kind. That's his name. Mm-hmm. Richard Kind is this kind of put-upon colonel who's a PhD. He's wearing a military uniform at one point, whatever. And he's just making guesses, and Spader's like, excuse me. And he has allergies because he's traveled. Like, the guy is the biggest loser. I hate Spader in this. James Spader.
Oh, he was...
And yet he's okay in the sand.
He said he only did it for the money. Like, this is one of those I need some fucking money.
You couldn't tell from his performance.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so committed to his craft. Also, you want to talk... No shit. I'm sorry. I'm looking at this and I need to pay attention. French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun was Ferretti.
He is.
What?
I thought I recognized that voice.
Which one is Ferretti?
The guy who said we're always going to die. We're going to die. We're going to die.
I totally missed that.
And I think he ends up dying, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
it's okay, Mr. Spader.
One scene that you missed that we need to talk about is how we're introduced to Kurt Russell. Now, Kurt Russell, in general, is a badass. We've done like a half dozen of his films, and we're introduced him about to commit suicide, sitting on the bed of his son, who found a gun apparently and killed himself by mistake.
Yes.
And now he's about to open his, like, blow his brains all over the kid's baseball trophies, which they keep cutting to as though he's... In fact, when the MPs come to say you've been reinserved or, like, you're being called back to service, he literally has a gun in his hand, looking at it, and he puts it under his kid's baseball pillows.
That's some dark
Our hero, shit. Ladies yeah. and gentlemen.
It does add a new twist to the trope of the retired colonel coming back.
It was I liked that because they said that way it sets up him with Skara, the Atreyu, son of the priest. Is it Atreyu? For real? That's Atreyu?
No.
Not Atreyu. He was making a joke em up.
Okay, good.
One of them joke em ups.
A Joker thing. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he becomes like a father figure to this kid he just met, and the kid tries to grab a gun and he freaks out like, no, you can't have this. You can smoke all you want. I'll give you the cigarettes, but do not grab a gun.
To me, it was too Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson sitting in his trailer holding a gun, thinking about killing himself.
Yeah, but you get the feeling with Mel Gibson, he's almost bored. Like, they did a line of blow, he's like, I wonder if this is gonna load this time. But here he's really just like, he has seen the deep end of the pool, and he's like, you know, I don't think it's deep enough. And it's funny because it's really not necessary for the whole rest of the movie at all, in any way.
Like,
it sets up the relationship with the kid and why he doesn't want the villagers to have guns.
I'm gonna go out on a limb as talking from a high school teacher to a high school teacher. You don't have to want to kill a kid or have lost a kid or want to kill yourself to just be nice to children. I'm gonna just go ahead and
as a high school teacher, you're saying that?
Yeah, as a high school teacher, I'm gonna go ahead and say, you know, you can relate to kids without being like, I lost my kid and I nearly killed myself at the beginning of this.
Well, to me, it was spoiler alerts for a 24-year-old movie, I guess. why he was so eager to stay behind and make sure the bomb goes off.
Exactly. Like, I hadn't really twigged on that until I watched it last night, that's why he was perfect for it. He had a suicide wish. He was good for the guy to stay behind.
Yeah, and I mean, for us, that works, I guess. That's fine.
Except, spoiler, he's the guy that comes back to Earth.
Yeah, he's the one who doesn't stay.
But he's the only one with a backstory.
Yeah,
James Spader has no backstory.
Other than his asshole.
Well, his backstory is he is a total failure on the verge of homelessness.
Like, it would be fun to
that's pretty common
to explore why is he so fascinated by this? How did he come up with this idea? Did he read The Gods and the Chariots?
Chariots of the Gods.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Someone saw a lot of Indiana Jones and saw them giving him a lecture at the beginning of every movie.
Even that would have been fun. But if he had an Indiana Jones hat that he wore as he was walking out of the lecture.
Oh, boom.
Like, he's just, like, sadly holding his, like, one day, one day.
Well, what's that rule about not referencing good movies and bad movies?
Tom Servo rule of movie references.
Here's what you should do. He should have worn a baseball hat. And then, like, gives it to one of the kids. Like, that. So, no, you need a trademark thing, but it could have been Philip Seymour Hoffman in Twister, just like a dingy old baseball cap, you know?
It's a suck zone.
Suck zone! That movie is a stay tuned.
Oh, is it ever?
We've thrown that around a lot. That and Dante's Peak, speaking of shitty disaster movies. Man, I had a dream the other night, this is random, but of someone getting out of the pool.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's...
Of his suck zone. No, of the old lady getting out of the lava pit. Like, when the lake turns to acid, and she gets sulfuric acid, and she gets out, and her legs are all skeleton bones. Yeah. And I had a dream about someone getting out of a pool with skeleton bone legs, and I'm just like...
I don't remember being that graphic in Dante's Peak, but I know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's kind of graphic. They couldn't afford the whole effect, so you just see a tear in her jeans and you see bones underneath it, but she couldn't be walking that way. Mm. Pierce Brosnan's hair just kind of gets tussled. He's a beautiful man.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so after Richard Kind has been working on this for, what they say, like 11 years?
2 years. James Spader did in 14 days what Richard Kind couldn't do in 2 years.
And Richard Kind doesn't immediately try to... He should have been on the mission and try to kill Spader the whole time. That kind of would have been a great, like, ticking clock.
Is that where that line about it's easy once you know the vowels comes in?
It must be.
I mean, when he was... finding the hieroglyphs in the pyramid showing that the peasants have been brought from Egypt.
Right.
And then he finally figures out how he can actually talk to people.
Like, I mean, all you need to know about Richard Kind's character is when James Spader first sees the chalkboard with the translation on it, he says, "Oh, who did this? This is ridiculous." And James or Richard Kind is just there. He's like, I did.
I've been working on this forever. Please.
And James Spader's just like, no. Oh, it's not Stairway to Heaven. It's Stargate.
Yeah. And it's funny because like what he said or whatever it was, like Passage to the Stars or whatever, is just as good as Stargate.
Yeah,
like,
it's equivalent. You know, exactly. Door to the Heavens, Stargate, whatever.
Yeah. But, you know, Door to the Heavens doesn't sound like a fun enough movie title.
It'd be a great Led Zeppelin documentary.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Figure, yeah.
And they're building a gate to the heavens.
Now, if you couldn't see that because the webcam's down, that's when everyone took a drink.
Even somehow me.
I thought you were gonna keep going.
Even somehow me that doesn't have a drink in front of him took a drink.
If Matt broke into a guitar solo right now. As we went on down the that would have been anyway.
Here I go again on my own.
Different song.
All righty then.
At this point, they whatever it is, the seventh seal.
They realize out of the blue, James Spader realizes it's not language. These extra characters are actually star symbols. And so you need seven symbols, six for a destination to get a 3-point. Or 3D point, and then one start point.
Now, if we extend the Stargate on the hypothetical Z axis, we'll find a cube or a Frankahedron in honor of its creator. Go hi.
Yeah, there you go. You need about 20% more plagiarism.
I'm.
And of course, for the military not knowing what the hell the Stargate does, they're awfully well prepared for what it does.
Yeah, they just walk through it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's molecular deconstruction, so one wonders if they're the same person on the other side.
Well, no, only if they're really, really overthinking this movie.
No one overthought this movie.
No one underthought this movie.
No. I mean, it's the same as Star Trek, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's like they talk about in Star Trek all the time, you're dead. The second you transport, you're dead, and they remake you. And
you have all the same memories and everything, so.
And the same hunger. You're still a fat Scotsman, or a fat Canadian pretending to be Scottish, you're fine.
And the same hunger for alien babes.
Yeah. Right. Speaking of, we show up in.
We meet our alien babe.
We meet our alien babes. We end up in ancient Egypt, which is just, I guess, the same desert planet that Beetlejuice's worms are on.
Oh, Saturn?
One of the moons, I think. Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Dune. Yeah.
It was somewhere way out there on the other side of the.
On the other side of in another galaxy, apparently.
Yeah. And on this other side, they meet John Crichton and the woodland critter, Christmas critters from South Park.
They sure do. We end up with like a horse, or I guess a rhino covered in shit. I don't know.
It's domesticated because it has a harness.
Yeah, I thought that was really good because it's practical effects and it's good practical effects. Like he's not interacting with an 8-bit graphic thing. It's like the Masters from Dark Crystal, like a big.
But it's not quite as cheesy as that, and it's not nearly as bad as the CG things from the redone Star Wars: A New Hope.
The Dubaks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is fine. I mean, it really is just
the practical effects actually were pretty good in this.
Yeah, they were fine.
Like the gods with their metal helmets.
Oh, yeah.
They looked pretty damn cool.
Yeah. They do. They whir and move around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a big blob of graphics in some dude's head.
Yeah.
Except when they get unmasked and they press that button and then they fly back. Then it kind
of. But even then, it's just pieces of metal moving. So there's that suspension of disbelief. It's not like they turn into a bubble and dissolve or something, which would be just ridiculous.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, they didn't release a production budget on this. I was going to look, but, you know, it did okay.
Now, Box Office Mojo might have it.
I'm literally on Box Office Mojo.
Oh, I didn't see. I thought you were still on IMDb.
But we learn that these people are basically ancient Egyptians on this alien planet.
Did anybody notice that the first one they meet, the older one, is the librarian from The Mummy?
Yes.
And he's good.
Oh, he was great.
He plays kind of, I guess, the chief of the village, because later on he also leads the rebellion, which is neat.
Yep.
And the kid who's following everyone around is the his son, I think.
Oh, yeah. They're a knockoff feral kid from the Road Warrior that they got in this
very
movie?
Road Warrior, very Hook as well, of all things.
Yeah, Scarra and Shara are his kids.
Yeah.
Is that from your review, too?
Yeah. I came prepared today.
Oh, that's good.
Awesome. Right, okay. I mean, I didn't know that.
I didn't take notes.
Their son, either. But.
I mean, okay, so effectively at this point, the Marines that follow, including French Stewart, that follow James Spader and Kevin... Kurt Russell through the portal. They set up a camp.
Wait. I'm not going to let this go. Who did you think Kurt Russell was just then?
Kevin Costner.
All right.
It's the right time.
That actually, I
think
see
he was
that.
Busy doing the Postman at this point.
Ooh.
Which is a mistake.
No, probably Waterworld at this point, which was Ooh. Also
even bigger.
Oh, I liked Waterworld.
You might have been the only person in America. Yeah. Is it what got you? When he started drinking his own pee in the first 5 seconds, or the fact that he nearly kills a girl by throwing her overboard for no reason?
All of the Mr. Freeze puns that Dennis Hopper gives.
The fact that Dennis Hopper makes all of his money off cigarette and like oil.
Oh yeah,
this sounds like something be for a future episode. I suppose.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean,
box office bombs.
The biggest box.
Cutthroat Island.
Or
John Carter of Mars.
Nick tortures Matt episodes.
Yeah.
I just, that movie, like, I saw 10 minutes of it, and the Simpsons joke of it is better, which is that Milhouse is playing the Waterworld video game.
Oh, man, what a ripoff.
It takes 10 bucks, you walk 6 steps, and it just says game over, insert 10 more dollars.
Insert 4 quarters.
And
he does it. He starts putting him back in that machine.
But I mean, like, I just remember, like, the first 30 seconds you're introduced to him pissing into a thing that turns it into a coffee cup of water that's stained yellow.
Isn't there a scene where he takes whatever that actress's name was?
Triple Horn.
Yes, her. Like, in that little breathing pod to downtown Denver that's all completely underwater.
Which is where he gets his soil from because it's a Mile High City or whatever.
That's right.
It's the dumbest premise.
The premise was done before.
It was.
It was just very badly executed.
And very expensive. So that there was effectively no way it could make more money than... Because it would have had to make more money than Star Wars at the time to be profitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I don't think that was a problem with Stargate.
Stargate probably cost a bit.
Yeah.
It did okay.
It cost a bit, but it did pretty well.
Well, I mean, and look at the year, man. It's 94. That means it did well enough that he could afford Independence Day a year later.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. I mean, like, and Independence Day is also a heavy CGI movie with a huge cast.
Oh, I remember.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
I remember when that came out, everybody was saying this is the most expensive thing since Jurassic Park.
Yeah. And that was 3 years before. I mean, like, and now we're used to people spending $250 million to make a movie, but back then it was still kind of rare.
I do admire the fact that this only cost, according to the Tribune, $55 million, and it looks
fun. As I said, most of it's practical effects. There's
and
some
sand.
There's miniature effects for the spaceships.
Yeah, the miniatures look
the
good.
The wide shots of the pyramid are pretty obviously matte paintings, though.
Yeah.
I miss matte paintings.
Yeah.
As a Daniel, I'd be surprised. Matt, do you miss matte paintings? Moving on.
I don't know.
Can we get to the best scene in this movie? And that's James Spader balking like a chicken.
Oh, my God. Okay, so at one point, they're invited to a feast after giving someone a candy bar.
Oh, yeah.
And
the exchange of foods.
The exchange of food. And they go to a feast, and everyone's wondering whether or not they're going to eat the chicken.
The chicken looks like an armadillo.
And James Spader eats it, and he goes, it tastes like chicken.
Bark, 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 bark.
And it becomes the room for about 45 seconds as everyone clucks at each other, because why not? James Spader could not be phoning this in from a further distance.
I was not kidding when I said he literally did this just for the money. He hated the script.
James Spader's character also frustrates me because he's acting by effectively wearing a wig. Like, that's his character trait. That's
wig and glasses.
Wig and glasses, yeah. Man.
Well, that was his character trait for a while.
Well, he's bald as the day is long, man. Like, it's not a surprise, but...
I was about to say, like, the actor in the TV show The Strain, who's actually apparently bald, and so most of the show he's wearing a wig until he decides to shave his head.
I've never seen The Strain.
It's the guy who plays the bad dude in Ant-Man.
I did not see Ant-Man.
Huh.
I was hoping
it was someone in this movie.
I was just saying, same principle, a bald actor wearing a wig.
How about The Blacklist, where it's actually James Spader, and he's just wearing a festive hat. There's a thing where people just wear hats to have characters now.
It saves on character development.
It saves on character. It's shorthand for he's the cool one.
Like Raw, he's technically making himself a character.
Let's
by
talk
wearing...
about this dipshit. Yeah. So there's like you said, it's the guy from
The Crying Game.
Crying Game? I almost said Sleepaway Camp. I guess it's the same. it's the same twist. So
yeah,
spoilers.
You're not
I guess.
Wrong.
But he plays Ra, who's kind of a man-child. They do him up in the old Egyptian way, so he looks very effeminate and very, like, They do an effect where every time he glances to the side, it flashes white in his eyes. Do you guys notice
that? That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It was an interesting effect.
Better than what they did in Dune.
Fine. Mm. Dune was unwatchable. Like, you could compare, like, it's better than, like, a brick wall. I mean, yeah, I guess it is. I mean, the spice must flow. Also, watching Star Wars again recently, because that Han Solo movie is about to come out when we're talking, they talk about Han Solo hauling spice. And I'm just like, he just dealt drugs. He was just a drug guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're just okay with him being a drug guy.
It's okay. It's space drugs.
Space drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that means Jabba is like the cartel chief.
That's yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what he's organized. Means.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine Wookiees have like deep anuses to hide drugs in. But
well, when you're 9 feet tall, I guess everything else is proportionally bigger.
Now you know
bigger.
Why Han hangs out with him.
That I'm almost 100% sure that was a Robot Chicken gag where they have the abominable snowman from
with the cocaine condoms bursting in his stomach.
You ever see from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? If we're not talking, if you have no idea, the Rankin and Bass is like, you ever see a bunch of coke blow up in a Yeti stomach? It's a bad scene, man. We're trying not to talk about this movie. So the Marines set up a base. A sandstorm comes in. No one knows what's happening. Kurt Russell, Spader, and this woman that Spader gets married to, because I guess why not?
I guess they think he was an emissary of the god or something.
Because
like
he has
that.
A medallion around his neck that the old woman who funded the expedition. This is very Titanic, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that whole thing with when she's obsessed with the Egyptian symbol on his necklace.
Titanic before Titanic. Exactly. So Titanic ripped this off.
Titanic ripped a lot of things off in retrospect.
But while we're on ripping things off, as I said to Nick earlier, this is the exact same plot of Atlantis, the Disney Atlantis.
Yeah, it is.
It's nerdy guy who's
with glasses.
Actually, you know what?
Hair.
Oh, we should go step by step here. Okay. Michael J. Fox or James Spader? Who's the trade up?
Who's the trade up?
Yeah, who's the better choice?
Oh, Michael J. Fox.
100%, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen Atlantis, The Lost Empire, so I won't comment.
Oh, you're missing out. It's on Netflix, I think.
I'll need to check it out again, too.
Maybe that's something I can do, because Secret of the Nim was a movie I saw when I was trying to see how movies I liked when I was a kid were still holding up. This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Mm. All right.
So I could do the same thing for a movie I haven't seen.
Yeah.
So moving down the list, James Garner or Kurt Russell? Because James Garner is the one who plays the bad guy.
I don't know. James Garner is forever tainted by The Notebook for me.
Yeah,
so.
But he was in Maverick.
He was.
And he's got the voice. Yeah. I mean, Kurt Russell doesn't have a lot of lines.
He's Maverick age at this point. So he would be really old for that character. Not like a Mel Gibson character.
Yeah, kind of. Now, the only difference between Atlantis and the other one is that Kurt Russell at the end gets kind of flipped around, right? Because at the end of Atlantis, it's only the bad guys, only the American military that want to destroy everything. But Kurt Russell gets reprieved because it turns out that the fake Egyptians want to destroy us as well, right?
Right.
However, Ra, who is played by the Crying Game.
Yeah.
The king of the Atlanteans is Leonard Nimoy.
Jay Davidson, by the way. This was only one of two movies he was in.
Yeah, he apparently wanted $1 million to play the role because he feared they wouldn't give it to him. And he's like, we're sure give you $1 million. He's like, okay.
I just wanted I just got an Oscar nomination on my first movie. Give me $1 million.
Yeah, why not? He deserved it. Now, that being said, Nimoy's a trade-up. We're done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Leonard Nimoy. Right. Like, he would have made a great Raw. I don't know. It just... No, that being said, Atlantis was a disaster.
Well, Leonard Nimoy was in Search Of, and they did a lot of stuff like about the origins of religions and aliens coming to Earth and stuff, so that might have worked.
I liked it for the same reasons I like this movie. It's vaguely, I guess, diesel punk or steampunk, I guess.
Yeah, it's very World War II.
Jules Verne.
Yeah.
Very historic futurism.
I would have liked this movie a lot better if it took place in the 1930s, like at the height of Egyptian.
If they'd stayed in,
if they'd stayed in that era, that would have been better. Or Indiana Jones-ish.
Where
the archaeology feels like it matters more.
And the King Tut references would have made more sense.
Yeah, that was weird. Especially since at the end, Kurt Russell's yelling King Tut, like references to people who don't speak English, so they don't respond.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Well, it's Americans. And, speak slowly and loudly to get your point
and
across.
And wasn't Tut like a couple thousand years
several
after Giza
thousand years.
Anyway?
Yeah.
Giza.
Egyptian civilization is like 4,000 years old.
Well, I mean,
the span was 4,000 years.
Know. Well, it's like the idea that Cleopatra is closer to us than she is to the creation of the pyramids.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how old they are.
Also, for those of you who haven't, you can pull it up on your phone, and I'll show John right now. Actually, I won't, but trust me. The poster for Atlantis has a Stargate on it.
Oh, it does.
So, yeah.
Oh my God! You're right. That is a Stargate right there.
I mean, it's just, and I don't mean it was a disaster in that it was a bad movie. I thought it was fine.
For a Disney movie, it was not.
It was a financial, and they blamed 9/11 because everyone did for everything that came out in 2001. Mm. But it just it didn't.
That was a rough year, to be fair.
Yeah.
Enron, Bush, Hanging Chads.
That was 2000.
That was 2000. Well, it carried over.
Yeah,
Bush did.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Michael J. Fox still had Parkinson's. That was a shame.
Mm. Yeah.
Disney had. Oh my God. So we'll talk about this later. But there's an alien documentary that Michael Eisner put out in correspondence with the alien extraterrestrial ride for Magic Kingdom, where he interviewed alien abductees.
Wow. Whoa. Is this on YouTube?
Wow. It's on YouTube. And it was like a myth until someone found an old VHS tape of it and uploaded it to YouTube not long ago. I'll send you a thing. Speaking of aliens and Disney. All right. So let's just wrap this up. At the end of the day, the American military had a bomb that they were going to blow up the Stargate from this side, from the Egyptian alien side.
You know, I'm going to lean on Ebert here. I looked up his review of this. He gave it one star.
Ooh. For reasons.
Yeah. And one of them was the fact that the automatic reaction to this is, well, we better be prepared to blow it up.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, in 2001, when they discovered the monolith was the first reaction, well, we better be prepared to blow it up. It's, no, let's see where this takes us.
Yeah.
That sense of wonder was gone.
Well, yeah, but they're... You're dealing with an alien. Well, they probably might have had some idea because in the extended version I saw on Blu-ray, they found there were fossilized warriors of Ra at the site of the Stargates. They might have known there might be potentially unfriendly people there.
Even though the helmets would have been metal.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember that scene being
Neither
in the original.
It wasn't.
And it confused me when I watched it the other night that it served no purpose whatsoever.
Yeah.
There were, what, like two extra scenes where they show that?
Yeah, and then they have the thing on display in the bunker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in the version that we saw.
I can see why they cut it, because it made no sense, other than, like, there are creatures out there. But it's alien. Of course there are going to be creatures.
Right, like, so, like, if you found, like, an ancient suit of armor, would you bring a nuclear weapon?
Well, depending what was attached to that suit of armor, it was laser weapons, yeah.
Well, but it was a human. They didn't know the laser weapon worked. Like, that's not in the scene that I saw, at least. Did the laser weapon work in the extended version you saw?
They didn't really have lingering shots on the fossil soldiers to see if they took their guns off them or not.
Yeah.
So no, they had no idea they had laser weapons. They just found an armor.
And they bring a nuke with it for the expedition just cause.
Like,
I get the weapons, the small arms, that makes sense, it's protection. Well, but the nuke seems overkill.
It's ironic that we did it this year, because this reminded me a lot of Annihilation, which, if you haven't seen, it'll be on Netflix in like a month. Like, that's what it is. They literally, a military group with some scientists involved, walk through something that they call the shimmer. Thank you. To just explore, to investigate, because you don't want to start by nuking things, especially since when they first go through, Spader's like, yeah, I can get you back through right away. So, like, why would you bring a nuke? You send the nuke through later. And it turns out that's what you're supposed to do, because they're like, we can make this 100 times stronger and send it back through your portal and kill you all. So,
Ra needs to really study nuclear strategy. Depending on what kind of bomb it was, that would have been basically the equivalent of Mount Pinatubo in the Rocky Mountains.
But he doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that. And A, and B, it doesn't matter. They were about to do the same thing to him.
Yeah.
Why does he have to learn nuclear technology when the American government didn't bother?
Because you're saying, I have created your civilization, I will destroy it. No, you're going to get lower global temperature by 1 degree.
Oh, that's pretty big.
He's been on another planet for how many thousands of years?
Hey, and you sound like you're like a Republican senator. I don't believe that global warming is happening. I have a snowball here, sir.
So some penguins get a suntan.
All right. But I mean, again,
I went to the zoo and saw myself a polar bear. Now, how can a bear that's polar still exist?
Yes, sir. I don't know. A crater in Washington, D.C., or wherever the hell they're supposed to be at the beginning. On the soundstage that they're in, where this movie doesn't bother to explain a whole bunch.
Well, it was shot on the same set as an Enigma music video.
That explains a lot.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, Ra ends up being shot, and then the peasants rise up because democracy. Isn't it great?
Yay.
Yeah, we have the French Revolution happen in 20 minutes after a failed execution attempt. And
yep.
Because the peasants realize that their gods are actually people pretending to be gods, which is what the Earth people found out 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, they had apparently the thing that Kusuf, the priest, is saying before all the villagers charge is the prayer to Ra in a way that is incredibly mocking in the actual language.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool.
Where do you find that out?
Wikipedia.
Possibly, because I had because when I write my blog TV review, trope. I have links. I have a lot of links built in, so I have to link to them.
Racial slur translator.
that's reaching.
No, I mean it was neat.
Okay, like, Martian.
There was stuff well done. I'll give it that. A lot of the story could have been tighter, I think. Like,
it's such a great idea, and they kind of just fell back on
tropes.
Yeah.
Well, and to your point, there's a reason why one of the spinoffs is Atlantis, too. Like, that's a neat idea. Like, there are these system of these kind of teleporting tunnels that can go across the galaxy. And this is where the Star Trek bit should have been upped a little bit. Like, it would have been neat if the first person they sent through was an emissary, and then the emissary is killed, and then we're at war with these people. But, like, the assumption is just, like, fuck them. Right? Like, we don't even know what they're doing. It turns out they're mining some mineral that might have been helpful because it's 1,000 times powerful, whatever Ra says, over our nuclear material. So that might have been helpful in some way. But no, our first response is just to fuck him up. It's Roland Emmerich having a political opinion on U.S. foreign policy. Shocker. The guy who made 2012 in The Day After Tomorrow has a political opinion. Independence Day Resurgence has a political opinion about aliens. Jesus Christ.
You invoked Independence Day Resurgence. Yep. No.
Take a drink, everyone.
Previous episode, Independence Day Resurgence. I guess look for it if you want to.
Probably.
If you want to suffer.
Don't do it.
It was not good. Anyway, I don't know, guys. You want to talk about the wife for like a second? She's the least important, uninteresting. She becomes kind of a hero at the end for no reason. They save her life, even though it risks the entire mission.
I literally remember nothing about her except her trying to teach James Spader some of her language and keep reaching for that pendant.
Well, I think she was the one who started getting the villagers riled up in the first place when everyone gets captured by Ra.
Well, and like apparently they got married in some weird exchange rite. And Spader rejects her because he doesn't want to just rape a woman. And so she goes around like, I didn't tell people you couldn't perform. So she thinks it's erectile dysfunction, which gave me an honest laugh because looking at Spader in this movie, you're like, yeah, he couldn't get an erection.
Except maybe when he was dealing with that large domesticated mammal.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. That drags him.
Yes.
So instead of that guy from The Simpsons who's into fishes, James Spader's into bison. Yeah.
Have you ever seen Secretary? We know what James Spader's into.
or Crash. He's into fucking corpses. Wound holes. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, my.
Yeah.
Both Crash movies are terrible.
Hey, the Cronenberg one was at least passable and had a decent idea.
It's original. I didn't think people wanted to have sex after car accidents, but I was wrong. Thanks, Cronenberg.
If you can think of it, there's probably some kind of fetish for it. What's that, rule 44?
34. Please. Thank you, Reddit. anyway, at the end of the day, John, you haven't spoken in a while. How does the movie end?
Oh, I love. They win. So Ra is going to send the nuke back to America and they reverse it. They send it back up to Ra. He's trying to run away, and it goes off in his ship. The peasants rise up and take out the guys on the ground.
There's that bit where, Anubis gets crushed by one of the Stargates?
Yeah, I think by the transporter thing.
Yeah, he has the I have in my blog, one of Ra's henchmen has a particularly creative death. I didn't want to go into a little more detail for fear of spoilers. But yeah.
He's 24 years old. He dies.
Yeah. Teleport him. Half of him.
Half of him.
Yeah. And then the guys all decide to go home. But wait, James Spader is married and he wants to stay.
Rather than bring his wife back with him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
He's going to stay and
technically
research.
In the 90s, that would be progress.
Yeah.
I guess. And I can kind of get why he's doing that. He's studied his whole life for this. No one takes him seriously. So why not stay here and study a living Egyptian society?
Be the smartest person in the...
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
John's idea is more charitable. This is a dream come true. You know, actual
I'm a historian,
Egyptian
sir.
Society.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
We're almost optimistic as historians.
Almost. But we secretly know...
Does
There's
anybody
no
remember Timeline, that Michael Crichton book?
Oh, God.
The book, yes. The movie is...
Oh, the movie's...
Oh, the movie's...
Unwatchable.
I like the movie.
You would.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No one liked that movie. No one...
That was entertaining when I was like 20.
20?
Are you 600? Like...
It came out when I was in college or maybe high school.
You weren't 20 in high school.
I can't remember how old I was. It was in that time frame, so 17 to 21, maybe. That's I don't remember.
Time. I mean, you might be right. They sat on the movie for a while because it was so bad that they refused to release it until one of the stars made it big.
You're not wrong.
No, I mean, Gerard Butler. They filmed it in 2000, then they sat on it for 3 years until 300 came out.
He was in that movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
He doing his normal accent. That's why it sounds funny to you.
Wasn't, Billy Connolly also in
Billy Connolly's in it, God. And then Watchmen, of course. So essentially...
2003, so I graduated high school and was on my way to college.
2003? Yeah.
You should have known better.
Yeah. And Paul Walker's in it, too.
Yeah, everybody.
Oh, yeah, oh, God.
I found this movie in the garbage. We could dust it off and just show it because it's in the garbage.
Sick, bro.
Yeah, sick, bro. Sick, bro. This movie was in the garbage. David Thewlis is in it. How can you throw something out with David Thewlis in it?
David Thewlis was in that movie?
Remus Lupin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Billy... I
prefer to think of him as the desperate drunk from Mike Lee's Naked.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to do more Crichton movies, but like... Jurassic Park is kind of where it almost should end because, like, Disclosure is kind of racist. Timeline's a train wreck. Sphere is weird. I liked Sphere.
The book was fine.
That book was never fine.
Dustin Hoffman was great in it.
Didn't
but, like,
we do Congo already?
Yeah, we did.
We did do Congo, which had almost nothing to do with the movie, with the book either.
The 13th Warrior was a Crichton novel.
And Crichton may have actually been the final director.
Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. And
Banderas playing an Arab. That's right.
Omar Sharif was in it.
Norway.
Norway. Yeah. Based on a real person, which is why you hire a Hispanic.
Exactly.
Ibn Fadlan, the great chronicler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, the book I really liked was Airframe, which Disney bought immediately, and then the string of Crichton movies completely bombed. So they own the rights still. They just haven't filmed it because they're like, he's poison.
Mm-hmm. Well, except for Westworld's big now, so.
Again.
That's true.
Because it was a movie in the 80s, 83, 84?
It was like 84? A 70s.
Movie? Yeah. And they also have the Andromeda Strain, two different versions.
That's true.
And The Great Train Robbery, his version was made into a movie. Basically,
go see a Michael Crichton movie or read a Michael Crichton book. Don't bother with Stargate.
See, before 1993. Well, we should wrap up here. At the end of the day, the bomb doesn't go off. Right?
It does go off.
It does go off.
It goes off in space. Instead.
It kills the pyramid, and then the people are free.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
James Spader does not die in the explosion, which we were hoping for. Kurt Russell makes it back through the liquid goo, which looks like something out of the Nickelodeon version of the Tomorrow People, and we're done.
Yeah.
SG-1.
Which came out 3 years later and was a much more... Like, this movie made $200 million, which, if your estimate is right, it made back four times the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. But... the TV show clearly ran forever and opposite Star Trek. So credit where credit's due. That's pretty damn good.
It did pretty well.
We'll go around the table.
Like we said, it's a good premise.
Yeah.
And they ran with it.
Since I've decided you were defending this, you can go last before me. So Matt and then Daniel, then you and then me.
Okay. I'm probably going to horrify everyone. I really liked this movie. It's never boring. It's entertaining. It's got fun stuff in it. I mean, maybe I'll find a used Blu-ray and order it and have it in my collection. We'll see.
Anybody want to hear some more crash facts? Apparently, Holly Hunter and Rosanna Arquette were in that movie.
Do they go to another planet?
In
a manner of speech.
No. I've honestly already forgotten so much about this movie. I really like the premise. It's a great sci-fi premise, and I want to see the TV show now, but I don't know. They don't really do anything with it that's really that great. It's just sort of a knockoff of stuff like Dune and the book, not the movie. And I don't know. Other people have done it better, a lot better.
Well, you might want to go for the... If they do the reboot, then maybe you'd want to see if they can do the same idea better.
Maybe. I'll hold out hope for that.
It's a fun premise, like we said. And I love the idea that ancient Egypt, they treat that really well with the alien thing without going into too much of the campiness, like big-headed gray guys or anything like that. It's somewhat believable in the way that early 90s ideas are. And I loved Atlantis for the same reasons I loved this. It's basically an Indiana Jones in space or doing hokey investigations into aliens or things like that. It's Indiana Jones 4, basically, is what I'm saying, which makes it a good movie. But Daniel's right that they could have done some things better, and whether it's traveling through time or going into space, like, it's the same basic thing. They may as well have just gone back in time for all that it really mattered. But like I said, I liked the movie, and the TV shows just solidified that the theme itself, the ideas behind it, are pretty damn solid. So yeah, I liked it. It's worth a watch.
So I'm going to surprise probably everyone. I'm more on Matt's side. I kind of enjoyed the movie. Here's the thing, though. I said this with John the other day at dinner. The problem with it for me is that, like you said, it's a better idea. Matt, if anything, this should be your redo fanfic kind of thing. Like, because, like, you did this for Revenge of the Fallen or whatever shitty Transform, which is a movie so
Revenge
bad that no
of
one
Fallen.
Yeah, don't even bother. Like, the movie's unwatchable. Why make something unwatchable?
Well, the first one was good. The second one was disappointing. The third one just kill me now.
So you spent 9 years of your life working on a script. Like, it doesn't make sense. This is something where you were excited by watching it. Why not? Like, this is where you, which is why SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, makes sense, because this is a neat idea, because it's not even as boring as Ancient Aliens, right? It's ancient worlds that interact, and people are using the premise of being a god to get slave labor. That's a neat idea. It's a scary idea. It's the idea that we're enslaved by religion. It's fun.
Yeah,
right?
If you want a real downer ending for this one, Ross sends a nuke back. The U.S. thinks the Russians attack them and nuke the Russians. They nuke us. The world is blown to hell. Ross shows up and makes the survivors worship him as God. That would be great.
There you go.
Cut off a step. Send a giant floating pyramid through. You have enslaved masses. Like, it's Kodos
right
and Kang. Yeah. Like, it's neat. Like, this works because of how scary it is. Now, I think in actuality, this is a perfect kind of lazy Saturday afternoon, you're sleeping off Friday kind of movie. You're right. It goes at a good clip. It's enjoyable. If you zone out for 20 minutes and check your phone, if you fall asleep and then look up when there's action, you don't miss much. So I think it's a perfectly functional, you know, this would be like a 7 out of 10, 6 and a half. Like, it's not a great movie, but it's a serviceable, fun movie, and it's short. You know, even with the credits, it's 2 hours and 5 minutes. Like, it's a complete wonderful lazy afternoon where you just want to have another beer before the football game, or you had too many beers the night before and you're waiting for the pizza to kick in.
Oh, boy.
You know, I always forget to pull this up. Daniel, you're the next one to come out because I'm forcing you to work on this. Tell us about your side project while I pull up the next movie.
Well, it's called The Stories Behind Your Childhood, and we've got two of the panelists here with me. I am going to read them some stories about a major theme that shaped our youths, a major event, and I'll have them react to it, and hopefully a good time will be had by all.
So we are doing a little bit of a Patreon. ESO Network has a Patreon account. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network. And for the first one, we are doing an episode. We already did an episode, which is going to be up probably by the time you're hearing this. Zach and I did a Zaction film on London Has Fallen. It is awful. And speaking of Gerard Butler, he's pretending to be American. I am Gerard Butler doing an American accent, which is funny because he's in London for this one. So there are people with actual Scottish and Irish accents, and he's trying to sound like an American, and he can't do it. So you have cartoon Irish leprechaun types around him. So they sound like this, so he can sound like an American compared to, oh, faith and begorra.
I've seen the first one he did in that, because London Has Fallen's a sequel, right? And that one was a train wreck.
It was a train wreck to begin with. And Aaron Eckhart as a steely-jawed guy, I believe, is like an Obama-like young president type with, you know, lean, tall. Gerard Butler is unable to... Because Aaron Eckhart is acting circles around everyone in this movie, regardless. So tune in next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial.
Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.